Guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM Saturday, broadcasting from Nassau, Bahamas, and streaming live on GuardianTalkRadio.com, the country's news talk radio station with fresh news and smart talk all day. Our Saturday lineup begins with The Eye Opener with Don Sargent and Tate Adderley live at 9 a.m. That's followed by Influencers with Lady Shima at 11 a.m. Next comes Candid with Anise Bell and Janae Forbes at noon. And then University Drive from the University of the Bahamas at 1 p.m. That's all straight ahead, beginning with The Eye Opener next here on Guardian Radio 96.9 Saturday.
Good morning. Good morning to you.
The Eye Opener.
And I'ma get it, oh, I know what I'm doing. Patience and it, I know what I'm doing. Baby, staring at it, I know what I'm doing. Staring at a gladiator, talking about a revolution. Now this is not a game.
And good morning, good morning, good morning, and welcome to this episode of The Eye Opener, your weekly dose of something different. We really apologize for the late start this morning. We had some issues with human resources this morning, I guess. But today we're going to have an interesting show as always. I am your host, Tate Adderley. Unfortunately, Dawn is out of the country at the moment, so he'll be joining us back shortly. But today, if you want to join in the conversation, you can call in at 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. And if you want to join into the conversation, you can text in at 422-GR96. That is 422-4796. So I am joined by Nitino Thompson today as well. And I think on the Zoom, we have Deandra with us. She has,
yeah? Yeah, she'll be joining us soon.
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, she's
good
here.
Morning.
Deandra, Wania, and Brista, how are you doing?
Hey, honest to God, I could catch you on the road and I could beat you. Stop calling my phone government.
Well, you know, people love you, know that, right? You know, you have admirers on the show, you know that, right?
Pardon?
You do. They love your voice. They love your voice and I love your viewpoints, okay? So be proud of that.
Yeah, okay, sure.
So how was your week, Deandra? How are you doing this today?
Honestly, Tate, it was a blur. I know that like Tuesday and Friday I did some medical like related stuff with my mom. Mm-hmm. I've had rehearsals and that's been me. Like whatever like was filling in the in between, I don't know. It happened. I'm here, I got to Saturday. That's where we're at. Mm. How about you? How are you, Tate?
I don't remember much of the week as well. Everything is a blur and we're kind of like in the planning mode at work, and so it's like I have a lot of stuff going on at the moment, so none of it's supposed to be for the better good, but none of it makes sense right now to me, so I'm just trying to get through that and do some great things, I guess. Nitino?
Why does everybody sound like this week was really like not that interesting?
Honestly, because life is not giving what it's supposed to give, and I am tired. Everything is expensive. I'm not being paid enough or at all for like what, like, you know, my labor.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like existence is just, it's just very bleak at the moment, you know? And so it's kind of like you're in this wave, like, okay, like you're down for now, but like where is the come up? Can I get an ETA for the come up? Because
5 years of 5 years of prosperity.
No.
5 years.
No.
5 years of prosperity.
Oh, God.
2021.
I don't know.
2026, sorry. 2026. That's going to come soon enough. because the PLP and the great Prime Minister, Dr. Brave,
our climate change leader
will do the best for us as a country. And so we're 5 years out from prosperity. So just wait until 2026.
I don't know.
I think I speak for all of us when I say that that's not comforting.
No, it's not. There's no comfort in that.
I think it's quite comforting. Right?
And like,
you gotta trust in the crabs, man.
Huh?
You gotta trust in the crabs. The crabs.
The crabs.
The yellow crabs.
The crabs.
Yes, the yellow crabs, man.
I don't know.
I reserve comment.
Yeah. For me in particular, this week. Yeah, it's not as bad. Last week I was feeling like how y'all feeling. Ask DeAndra. Like I was feeling like this. So this week is a bit better for me. It's not that much better. Don't go too far now. Don't go too far. You know. Last week I was going through it, right? But this week I'm excited. I think there was something like better about this week, right? There's a little bit of hope that came to me. Nothing really changed that drastic for me to say that there was like this impact of that. But I mean, I don't know. Sometimes like when life gives you like a glimpse into the future, like things are going to be okay. You're going to be like, okay, you know what? It may be like it's not going well now, but someday it's going to change. And be like, okay.
Are you going to, should this I have a like drastic an organ? Should we have like an organ track in the back?
Well, you know, you're gonna hit the C sharp right there.
I feel like this is preaching Latino.
Exactly.
But yeah.
Coming through with the inspiration this morning.
No, I do think that things are going to change. I mean, I know that all of us, the fact that, I'll say this one thing, right? And I told DeAndra, it's not a coincidence that all of us are feeling these symptoms, right? And this is actually going to coincide with the topic, right? Because I attribute it to this wider kind of oppression, right? It's this kind of oppressive kind of environment. And the way that the systematic structures are working on us, because I don't think people understand that oppression is very much as we talk about it being like a structural problem, it's an emotional experience, right? There's a lot of emotion that goes into oppression. And in our studio today, we have two guests who I'm excited to have on this conversation because one has done some research on, you know, on oppression in terms of dispossession of land in the Bahamas. And the other is a social commentator and I think brings a new perspective to it. And I think that they both have something to say to this topic. So I'm going to let them introduce themselves. You could go ahead first.
All right. My name is Demjay.
Speak to the mic.
All right. My name is Demjay Edwards. I am 21 years old. I just graduated from the University of the Bahamas with an associate's in law and curriculum. And I'm currently planning on attending Acadia. Pursuing sociology.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I have a platform on TikTok where I talk about social problems in the Bahamas. And that's what I've been doing for the past year and a half now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, Owen, go ahead. You're no stranger to the show. So you can go ahead, Benny.
Ian Bethel Bennett. Morning, everyone. Thank you for having me here. I am lecturer at the University of the Bahamas.
Yeah, so...
Good morning, Dr. Bethel Bennett.
he asked for you as soon as he got. He's like, where's DeAndra?
Oh, wow, I missed. I am coming to you from the great beyond.
Oh, goodness.
But yes, today, the show, we're going to talk about that. But before we get into the topic, which is oppression... we have some hot topics. Tate, I don't know, you said you may want to talk about some stuff, right? You had some ideas. I know,
I think your list is very good.
The list, okay.
Did you see that thing about Clinton? I'm tired of talking about Clinton.
No. Well. But yes, no, I did. Because you're talking about the one where he refused. Which one are you talking about? Because he was in two this week.
He was in two, I think, where he was talking about the prices.
The prices.
Was about the CC Winans concert, right?
That yes, the Dorian Survivor, yes. So yes, we want to talk about some hot topics. And you, feel free to join in. So
sure.
The press secretary decided that, you know, he was going to speak on behalf of the government. I obviously, he had permission to do that, right? He's the press secretary. But that whole exchange with the Retailers Association and the government about who's to blame for inflation,
yeah.
I was like, in what world?
What, it's like, a deflection for me.
Just own up to it. I didn't get it, right? Because apparently, and for those of you who did not get the or see it, Clint Watson was standing there saying that any questions that the press has, they should direct to the Retailers Association. Meanwhile, the Retailers Association is like, why are y'all trying to blame us? like, we get the directions from y'all, because apparently Clint and the government said that they gave... Clint is the government. So Clint was saying that that they had already made provisions for inflation, so that inflation doesn't hit the Bahamian people 2 months ago. Mm-hmm. However, it's not being enforced throughout the stores. So I'm like, whose problem is that? That's the enforcement of whatever y'all put in 2 months ago should be your problem.
Yeah, it should be.
Isn't that like price control? Is that not what they do?
That is what it is. It's price control.
I think one of the main things I would have, you know, said, Davis would have said regarding his one of his budget priorities was to deal with the cost of living crisis in the country. Mm-hmm. That was one of his main budget priorities. So to me, it's kind of like, it's shameful for them to take this stance when we know that in the budget narrative, the point of the budget or what was to actually bring down the cost of living. So this language to me, it feels kind of like hands off or neoliberal in a sense.
It is neoliberal,
right,
because
right.
again, the government is divesting their responsibility
to the people,
right? Not just to the people, but they're giving it over to the business owners. They're saying the businesses are supposed to be in charge of that. And I'm like, no. I want the audience to understand that when you have this kind of deflection or blame game going on, what's going to happen is business owners can do the hike ups that we see happening in the stores. When they had the, what was, how much, when the price was for the yellow peppers?
It was like
$9?
$9 for peppers?
And Super Value. I don't know.
You mean the bell peppers?
The bell peppers, yes.
I think I saw that picture.
It was like nine, but these are the things that we've been talking about. I think the other thing that really got me is that, Clint was also in the feud with the Dorian Survivor from Abaco. I was like,
I haven't been on social media for a week, but I haven't seen that. I haven't seen the text.
No,
messages,
but you need to, you
but
need,
I've heard the story though.
You need to hear what he said. He said that. He doesn't have time for frivolous conversations like this. And I was like, how do you tell a Dorian survivor that them telling you that the celebrations, and they put that in quotes, that y'all have planned for them is it, because they were saying it's insensitive. The money could have been better spent on something else.
Did you see when they were having a press conference? I think they would have, a week before that, when they announced the CC Winans concert. I keep calling it the CC Winans concert, but it's more than that. But that just stands out to me, right? But the week after, they had a press conference, and they had Dorian Survivors come and sort of co-sign the event. Did you see that?
No, I didn't see that one.
Okay.
I didn't see that.
It was strange.
It was,
right? It was very strange.
I need to go rewatch that?
You need to watch it, because... Okay. There were two people that came. It was a lady and a man. And this man went on this whole emotional spiel about how he survived through Dorian, how he almost lost his leg, and how he faced all this hardship. And that because of, you know, what he experienced, he's very thankful to the Prime Minister for what they're doing for the Dorian celebrations.
Ooh.
And so, and then there was the other one who...
Hold on, pardon?
Yeah, exactly. So there was another one, this girl, this lady, and she was on stage, and she was talking about how she lost family members through Hurricane Dorian, and she had problems finishing her speech. Like, she was on stage crying at this point, right? And she was like, oh...
And at no point do we think a psychologist or therapist is needed.
Right, and so it's like, she was like, oh, I am also thankful for what the government is doing. Y'all should support.
Wait, but what are they doing? What are they doing?
What are they doing? So it's like providing a CC Winans concert, right? And so it's like that whole thing is like they are. I think it goes back into what Ingram said, right? This is a government of PR, right? I think I don't want to say
he was doing a lot of talking.
He was doing a lot of talking.
A lot of talking. I
don't know if it's good to say that their PR is good, but they try. They try to sell things to us, right?
For certain people, the PR does work. Yeah,
of course. Mm. And so it's like this.
It's for people who want to believe the nonsense,
right? And so
I have to remember that I'm actually not in studio and I'm on a call and I can't curse.
You can't curse.
No, DeAndre, you cannot.
I can't. Okay.
There's this constant reliance. So there's constant having to come back to the public and sell them things, right? And I think this could all be avoided if you just consult with the public. Right?
Yes.
And talk with the people and ask them what they need. I don't know if
I am of the belief. I don't think that they care, Tate.
Well, they.
I think you asked. I think going to the people, because see, there are some things that you can see.
Mm-hmm.
You can see certain like things, like certain infrastructure needs to be fixed.
Yes.
You know that there are certain communities that are suffering from like low employment rates, from like poverty, from mm-hmm. you know, just like everything just being too high, too expensive.
Right.
So I don't feel like there are certain things that you have to like go to talk to the public about. But it, with this in particular, like we don't, the survivors of Dorian from Abaco and Grand Bahama do not need a concert. You know what they need? They need housing assistance.
Yes.
Like, so like the Dome City, is still up.
I am glad that you brought it up, Deandra. I'm glad that you brought it up. Because I talk about Joe Beth Kobe Davis sometimes.
Oh!
But I think there was a story about a few weeks back. When they were talking about getting rid of the domes.
Yeah, I remember that.
Give the people about $4,000.
So where they could put the people?
And the people came back and said they don't want to leave us yet because $4,000 isn't enough. Where the hell they can go when a housing shortage is on Abaco? And I think that that points back to the lack of public consultation, right? You think that you're doing good for people, right?
Mm-hmm.
You think that you are doing some altruistic good, giving them $4,000, which is I think is a good thing to do, but. If the people come back to you and
say...
It's not enough. And if the people come back to you and say that they don't have access to proper housing, then...
Bethel Bennett wants to jump in and... Go ahead, Demjai. Go ahead.
You can go first. Okay. I noticed a small line that Clint said in his little conference thing. He said, I liken it to what America does with 9/11 when he was talking about trying to justify the event. And when I read that, I made a visible face because I was just thinking, why did you need to point to America and say, okay, they did that, so let's do something similar too. I feel like you shouldn't have to look outside of the Bahamas to justify doing a memorial for a catastrophe, a Bahamian catastrophe. It just, to me, it felt like it wasn't genuine. Like, it's just to show people who aren't Bahamian, look, we have compassion, look, we are doing the same thing that they did.
It's performative.
Yes, yes,
it's
exactly.
Very performative.
It's not genuine.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Go ahead, Bethel Ben.
I have missed the whole world. I am in shock. It's like saying to a person, we understand that you don't have a house. But here, take this dollar and buy something with this dollar.
Mm-hmm.
Because basically that's what we've done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The value of that $4 is going to be a dollar within a day. So by the time the person has access to that $4, it will be reduced to 50 cents.
Yes.
So, and that's called the reality of the global market.
You know what I was watching? I started watching this week, Veep.
Oh, you started watching Veep?
Because you mentioned...
Listen.
And it's a great show.
No, Selena Myers?
Great vice president.
Listen, the vice president? Listen, I that show embodies everything that I think goes on behind, not just in the U.S., but I think in here.
And I
could only imagine. Go ahead, sorry.
And I like that he made the point about performativeness because it feels so performative, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the constant thing that we see in the show is that they are doing these things for... wins in the public perception, the public eye, right?
PR.
And
yeah.
They don't really care about the underlying good that will come mm-hmm. of certain situations,
yeah.
Right? And
agreed.
So it's like, it's all performative. It's all a performance.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, you then begin to question, like, why are we even participating in this? Like, it's so stupid.
You know
why are we doing
the
this?
Box is ticked.
No, yeah, that's what it is. It's ticking boxes.
Yeah.
But you know what's all, you know what? Let me tell you what also got me, right? Was when, since we're on this, when the government, hold up, the headline read, government calls for shutdown of Junkanoo Village. I squawked because how does the government call for something to be shut down when you're the government? You can shut it down.
Boy.
Not just that. If it's truly the hazard that you say it is, if it's truly dangerous as you say it is, then shut it down.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, I'm confused here.
Yeah.
Like, who's the government?
Yeah.
If the government is calling for it to be shut down, but the government doesn't shut it down,
yeah.
Then who's the government?
Yeah.
That's the question, Bethel Bennett. Who's the government? Because I don't get it.
So,
make it make sense to me, Deandra.
So before we get into that, we have a caller.
It doesn't.
Good morning, caller. You on the air. Thank you for joining us.
Good day. This is Stark in a voice. We need justice, law, and order in this country, the Bahamas. Cup Raymond Darling Ferguson. Well, let me ask you all something. The Winans conflict, right? Mm-hmm. What have they done with the money? That's my question before I make my comment.
I actually don't
know. We don't know.
I can't hear you.
We don't know.
We don't know.
We don't know.
We don't know what they've done with the money, except that they have these celebrations planned on the different islands, and the main culmination has always been that it's been talked about or touted as the CC Winans concert. Right? We like any organization in terms of psychologists, right? I remember the Bahamas Psychological Association. They worked alongside the NAGB, if I'm not mistaken, Bethel Bennett. That was coordinated outside of the government, right? And so the question is, why aren't you getting people help? Because they, if more than anything, therapy would help them better than a CC Winans concert. Mm-hmm.
True. Tell me some, how much money they made from the concert?
I don't know.
We've been trying to wait for
figures. What needs to happen, right? Because somebody said, they don't care. They really doesn't care about the Bahamian people other than themselves. What should have done, what they should do, is get a piece of crown land together, right? And for those people that need houses, those Bahamians, right? Build some houses and give it to the people. That's what I thought they would have done. That's what I would do. That when I first heard the people lost all their belongings, their house and everything like that, that's the first thing came to my mind. And if you're not doing that, that shows you, man, you're joking. You don't care about the people. But that's what needs to be done. And I would hope, knowing that government wouldn't want to do it with our money, then I pray somebody come in and, you know, that has feelings for those people and do the above, you know, because that's what needs to be done. Yeah, people living like that.
Well, like you said, Carla, that is actually the job of the government. We shouldn't even have to have somebody else come in and be benevolent to us, right?
We shouldn't. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, they're not trying to do it.
No.
Or somebody should agitate for them to do it, because it's our money.
Yes.
And it's our people.
Yeah. All right.
Well, thank you.
Well, thank you so much for your call.
I want to touch on something the caller said. The caller was talking about how someone else has to come in and agitate the government. And I feel like that attitude is what kind of has brought the Bahamas to where it is now, where we always have to be looking outside.
Yeah.
And
yes.
It's just upsetting because it seems like we lack control so much to where we have to say, okay, let's look here for the influence, let's look there. And it's just disappointing.
It's very disappointing. I caution that whole benevolent kind of savior, because in other words, you're looking for someone to come and save you.
It's a nasty word.
Yeah. No. I don't know. We know when that you open the door for disaster capitalism. Mm-hmm. It's just a whole plethora of things, because mm-hmm. people can then come in and say, like they've done in South Africa, and they'll be like, okay, we're gonna build it back. We're gonna build it better. It's gonna be a green, sustainable space. And what they do is they'll throw up a hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not sustainability at all.
Do we even talk about Ragged Island?
No, we don't. Oh, thank you for bringing that up, though.
Thank you for bringing that up. You know that light? But I think it was Jasper who did this story, or somebody in the news.
Okay.
And you had the Deputy Prime Minister talking about how Ragged Island is a green idol now. And then I think the next week or a few days later, a story came out.
With the little girl, right?
Garbage that is happening in Ragged Island.
No,
yes.
But... Go ahead, so Dr. Bethel.
One of the challenges you have in the Bahamas is that Tate is related to Natino, is related to Demja, is related to Fulano down the road, is related to Moquisha. And so everybody's afraid to piss people off because they're all friends and they're all cousins and they're all auntie, uncle. And so nothing can happen because nobody is willing to step forward. As soon as someone steps forward, nobody else, all the people who say, yeah, 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 we support you, they back down.
You sound like my daddy. My daddy's stay telling me that. Go ahead, sorry.
But within that, you have people that understand that things need to happen in a certain way. And I know this isn't answering anything, but it kind of opens up a picture of what Paulo Freire talks about and what Nkrumah talks about in terms of neocolonialism.
Yes.
But it also looks at the way oppression works within the mental space of the oppressed.
Go ahead.
Because the oppressed becomes the oppressor.
Yes.
And that doesn't shift. But we don't see that because there is no racism here.
So I'm glad that you segue there, right? Because what is oppression, Dr. Bethel Bennett, right? Oppression, according to Marilyn Fry, oppression is living one's life confined and shaped by forces and barriers which are not accidental or occasional and hence unavoidable, but are systematically related to each other in such a way as to catch one between and among them and restrict or penalize motion in any direction. If oppression is metaphorically being walled in, it is important to remember that the walls are made of people in action. These actions create particular advantages for one group while creating disadvantages for others. And I think that that's what you're talking about, right? The fact that if we're all related or if we're all in networks, right? Because, and watch this, familial networks in the Bahamas are the way that we keep people outside of the circles, right? Because it's very clicky, right? We call it cliques in the Bahamas, right? Go ahead.
I just wanted to say, in terms of calling out bad behavior and talking about, you know, oppression, patriarchy, misogyny, et cetera, et cetera, I find that a lot of people find it hard to do because if they really, you know, go hard against, you know, a problem, they'll find that somebody close to them is probably not going to agree with them. And now they have to choose between being right or being alone. Because I find that a lot of people would prefer to...
I like what you said, though.
Be around people who have, you know, problematic ideologies than to be alone and just, you know, be isolated, essentially.
But I think, But the way that you say the Demjai is very... And I love it because the choices that you're caught between is being right... Mm-hmm. And being isolated and alone mm-hmm. versus being in the crowd, mm-hmm. right? Soren Kierkegaard would say that the crowd is untruth, mm-hmm. right? And that there's no truth in the crowd because the crowd itself doesn't have... They're made up of several different people, right? Mm-hmm. And it's only... The only way that you can find truth is you have to be alone. You have to discover what that means by yourself. And I think that a lot of people are uncomfortable with being alone psychologically with themselves, right? Because for me in particular, right, I'll use me as an example. One of the things that I've had to come to grips with is the fact that if I'm going to speak up the way that I am, people are going to dislike you. People are going to, they're going to isolate you. And that is not it's not comfortable at all. But I made up my mind, like, I would much rather tell the truth. You dislike me. You do whatever you need to do. You betray me, whatever you need to do. But at the end of the day, what I said still stands. And I think that in the Bahamas, we have this herd mentality, right? It's very detrimental. It's called the tyranny of the majority, right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes the tyranny of the minority, because when you look at government, that's a minority of people who are very tyrannical in the way that they use their power over the majority who have given that power to them. Right? There are two kinds of ways of interrogating oppression. Synchronic explains why pervasive patterns exist by examining patterns of cooperations or collective action amongst one group. For example, the way that men behave in terms of the domination of women, the collective action that group does towards women, that's one way of dealing with it. And then diachronic is identifying patterns of interactions amongst two groups within a shared environment. One of the most notable examples is Marx's account of proletarianism. And he talks about when wages are lowered to subsistence levels, workers consume them by simply continuing to live, and they have no choice but to return to the labor market. And so when, in other words, it's talking about when one group chooses to lower the wages so low that the other group can't even live off of those wages, the way that that works and functions within the world. And so when it comes to looking at Bahim society, we have to look, in order to identify the where oppression lies, we have to look at the structural inequalities and ask ourselves the questions, is everyone equal in the Bahamas?
But it's like when you live in the United States and you live in a red belt, you understand that everybody thinks like you. There's nobody who thinks differently or who willingly says anything. So that you cannot understand how it is bloody possible that Trump lost the election. Because everybody in your 2x4 community voted for Trump. So when you step out of that community, you begin to think, well, no, something is not right here. But you reject that because it doesn't fit with the narrative that you understand as your life, your reality.
Mm-hmm.
So if you live in Alabama,
mm-hmm.
and I'm picking on Alabama, I'm
sorry. Yeah, that's fine.
They understand that everybody around them thinks just like them. And if the person does not think like them, they're not going to open their mouths.
But isn't that an assumption, though?
No. Because you live in a community that is so homogenous that the thinking, the education, the religion, it all leads in a particular direction. And that direction is being disenfranchised, disassociated, and impoverished. And so what you see is that everybody understands that Trump is there to help them. And mm-hmm. they all support Trump.
Okay. But no.
But so when you go into a city that is not that, and people actually don't support Trump, there is something's wrong here. The equation doesn't work.
And the reason why I'm saying this is because no community is that, like, homogeneity is a...
You know that.
Yeah, I know that.
They don't know that.
Okay, all right. All right.
They live within that homogeneity.
Yes.
They understand that everybody... That's why it's so impossible for people to be gay in that community. That's why it's so impossible for women to be lesbians. That's why it's so impossible for blacks to fit in.
Yeah.
Because the narrative is a certain way that constructs the entire reality. And if that isn't the way it is, then something is wrong.
How do we tackle that, right? So I think the most important thing, like, we talk about living in an age of information, right? And I don't know if you know about Andrew Tate, right? Have you heard her about it?
This is the guy who everybody was talking about this week?
Yeah, who was banned.
Yeah.
From everything,
right? So it's like people believe what they want to believe,
mm-hmm.
right? They were banned. He was banned, right? And he was banned from the platform. And I think I had a certain issue with that because I'm not a supporter of Andrew Tate, right? But I think that when you push people into enclaves and you ban them, I think their views become very stronger, right? And that leads to certain mistrust of the system, right? But I think at the heart of it is that how do we...
Well, we haven't banned Lincoln Bean, though. How do you explain Lincoln then?
Well, Lincoln is a different story for me. Right, Lincoln Bean has not been banned, right? But
if anything, they feel like they've given him platforms.
Yeah, and so I wouldn't say. So in a sense, Lincoln Bean has sort of been banned, right? Because he's been pushed to Facebook. I mean, who allows him on radio? And I remember in some cases when people brought him on radio, like, they were sent off to another radio station. So.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
So. I would say that he's sort of in the same space because we pushed him onto the platform of Facebook, right? But I want to
get... And that other platform.
And that other platform. Tingham.
Tingham.
Right? Yes,
Tingham.
Yes.
No. You need to see that, Benny. You need to see that.
You go down that.
I was on it.
It's insane.
No, he went. Yeah.
It's a different reality from what people believe.
Yeah.
In this room and in the city.
That is totally different. That is literally our kind of Trump.
Yeah.
Here.
And so my thing is, how do we tackle that misinformation, like disinformation, right? Mm. How do we get into those populations and talk to them and try to bring them to a sense that, hey, these people are lying to you. They're lying to you because they want power, right? What is important is that we need to improve your state of living, and your state of living is declining as you keep voting for these people.
Go ahead.
One thing that I noticed, I wanna liken back to the pandemic and the lockdown that happened, and a lot of people changed their ideologies because they had more time to really think about, you know, their surroundings. You know, people realize, oh, I don't actually like this, because they just had more time to actually, you know, think about it. And I feel like day to day, you know, doing your 9 to 5, coming home, being too tired to even think, you know, you want your vitamin, your bamboo shock, right? It's a lot more easy to digest a simple sentence such as, oh, you know, people coming into this country, they doing this, they doing that. But then for somebody to come in with a detailed explanation and tell you, okay, this is a intrinsic problem in Bahamian society and, you know, et cetera, which one will they digest more easily? It'll be the truth that is the truth that is wrong.
Easily explainable.
But they don't have enough mental capacity or just stamina to really understand what's being said.
But that's oppression right there.
Mm-hmm. That's why poverty is so important.
Yes.
Exactly.
Also, but the symptom of oppression is that you're always exhausted.
Exactly.
That's the thing. So when y'all were talking, I was like, that's it, right? And it's, but we're not conditioned to see that as part of our oppression,
mm-hmm.
right? And what is being oppressed? Your mental capabilities, the ability for you to be able to think outside.
So in Australia, Canada, the United States, New Zealand, and probably in the Bahamas if it really were big enough, most indigenous people were taken from their homes and sent to schools
yes.
to be re-educated.
Yeah.
And this has happened in China. So the same thing that the Chinese are doing with the Uyghur population has been done for centuries.
Mm-hmm.
It only ended, I think, in 1970s or 1980s mm-hmm. in some places. And it continues in other ways which are less obvious but existent. So how is that not oppression? How is that not deracination of an entire population?
Yeah.
But we don't think of that as that in this space because we don't see it happening.
No.
We don't see school closures. So the Filipino journalist who won the Nobel Prize the other day was talking about it is so hard to actually true or what the facts are because we have never had anything quite like this level of bombardment with unfacts, with unrealities, with
starting this Ukraine war. Oh my God.
Well, when you talk about you're talking about the Ukraine war.
Well,
go ahead.
No, I mean Afghanistan is a simple that opened the door for Ukraine.
Yeah.
But the United States.
What about you mean Iraq and Afghanistan then?
Afghanistan really begins a lot of things. Yeah, Iraq destabilizes the entire region because that was the only person who was keeping it in play.
Yeah.
I don't even want to call it in place. But, you know, the United States and Russia have been fighting over these areas for decades,
yeah.
or centuries, mm-hmm. really.
Yeah.
And so their move allowed Russia back in.
Yeah.
But they knew that was going to happen. If they didn't, they don't know their own history. Because they have a history of oppressing a certain group and empowering another group, which is what you see happen in Rwanda.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
So there are confluences that allow these things to happen. And I know that doesn't speak to anything that we're talking about here, but it actually does because
it
shows you how the media manufactures consent to use it.
Yes.
But when you go against the media comes after you.
Yeah.
Because the media has to protect the media. And again, the United States and Britain have done wonderful jobs in this, and people don't challenge them anymore. And the fact that you could not own multiple media sources or forms before the 1990s, they had, you know, antitrust laws that really prevented, and competition laws.
Mm-hmm.
Antitrust and competition have seemed to have gone by the wayside. So those laws, while they may have seemed to not work in favor of certain things, were actually beneficial for the population.
Okay.
So the population lost out when people won. And again, Murdoch was one of those people who won.
Yeah.
And I guess CBS, Time Warner, whomever, was another of those organizations that actually won, which allowed people like Epstein to proliferate and to...
No, you're right.
To grow.
To grow and do
but we don't. But we don't think about that.
And we also don't make those connections.
No.
But that's essentially what oppression thrives off of, right? Not us not being able to connect or make those connections in the way that you're doing or you're showing us, right?
Mm-hmm.
One of the main features experienced by oppressed people is the double bind, right?
Yes.
All right, and it's a situation in which the options are reduced to a few of to very few, and all of them expose one to penalty, censure, or deprivation. So, for example, voting for two parties or candidates in the Bahamas, and we know that no matter the choice, the quality of life will not be improved individually or for the overwhelming people voting in the process. We're getting ready to go to the break, and when we come back, we'll continue this conversation after this.
Future is full of super possibilities, so you need a super college savings plan to match. With an RF educational investment account, you can get returns well above the traditional savings account. You can use the funds to cover a variety of educational expenses at home or abroad. And if things don't go as planned, the funds are easily transferable. Plan for all your child's super possibilities with the RF educational investment account. Get started today at rfgroup.com.
The Access Accelerator Small Business Development Center is here to help small businesses throughout the entire Bahamas. To better serve you, we've made it easy to contact us. Call 461-7232, WhatsApp 359-0626 or 359-2394, email helpdesk@sbdcbahamas.com or submit a ticket when you visit our help center at accessaccelerator.org. The Access Accelerator, empowering small business.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
Good morning, good morning. Back to the Eye Opener. I think we're having a very riveting conversation today. That didn't sound very enthusiastic, but I know myself very well. I'm a very boring person. But anyway, I think that we had a caller that was calling before the break. So caller, if you want to call back, please call back at 323-6232. That is 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. And if you want to text in, you can text in at 422-GR96. That is 422-4796. But before we get back to the conversation, we have a text. And this person said, good morning, texting in from Grand Bahama. I think we try to mimic other countries like we don't have a mind of our own and the intelligence. Our successive governments are just too dang lazy to sit down and come up with our own heads. Get some fresh-thinking young people in there to help manage this country. I was born in 1967, and I'm fed up with the status quo. Keep going, Latino. Yeah, I think we were talking about...
The double bind situation. Yes. All right, so the double bind situation, like I was saying, is when, a good example of that is when we go to the polls and vote between FNM and PLP. This is my example. right? Because none of them are going to help to improve the quality of my life or the quality of life of the overwhelming majority of Bahamians, right? We've seen it. This is something we always talk about. We always talk about choosing between the less of two evils. Mm-hmm. That right there is an indication of that we're being oppressed. Go ahead, Demjai.
A couple years ago, I used to be more interested in Bahamian politics, you know, seeing what the PLP is doing, seeing what the FNM is doing. But once it clicked to me that they were two sides of the same coin, I became disinterested.
Okay.
And what I realized is that a lot of young Bahamians are just disinterested because they know that it's not really going to make a difference, but that's making the problem worse because it's just giving the older generation more power to keep these people in power. So it's like a cycle of just going back and forth between no change being made, people being mad that no change is being made, so they become disinterested. And then they stay out of politics. And then those people who kept those people in power can keep them in power.
Well, we have Lincoln Bain.
The approach that I've done is consciously abstaining, right? But also advocating like this on the radio and other platforms, trying to get people to really think. Because if we go... I think that we don't understand, it, particularly when it comes to voting and representation... the independent person or people who have normally gone independent, I think Randall Fox has been a great example of what you can do if you go independent. Tennyson Wells, there's a little bit of problems there, but he's been kind of okay. There's huge problems there, right? I know. But I think about Randall Fox mainly, right? For a minute, like, nah. So yes, but Randall Fox mainly has been, he's the perfect example of what you can do if you decide to go independent. People will support you, right? And I think that if you look at his legacy, that's the main takeaway from me, right? I've looked at his legacy. Without Randall Fox, you would have never had the first black, right? Or the first Afro-Bahamian government. And even though that hasn't, the results of that, the first Afro-Bahamian government hasn't really bode well for black Bahamians, because nothing much has really changed. I look at those kinds of the activities that he did, right? Because the labor movement, he really worked in, or he used the grassroots. It was all about labor. I'm not saying that you can't replicate what he did because those were different circumstances.
Yeah, different times.
But I do think that he can. Looking at his life and what he attempted to do is a kind of model for what we need to do now.
Good
right?
morning, caller. You are on the air. Can you hear us, caller? Caller, you still there? Okay. Good morning, caller. You on the air? Okay, I think I pressed something wrong. Please call back. I think I pressed the wrong button. Press the bottom button. Good morning, caller. You on the air? Hello? Okay, this is very weird.
Okay. If you're having problems, you can call us at 323-6232. And if you want to text, the text lines are 422-4796. That's 422-4796. While we get that sorted out, Beth Bennett, you wanted to respond and say something?
Okay, I think the caller's back on. Just 1 second.
Okay.
Good morning, caller. You on the air.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
You know, I'm going to get to the point to ask each and every one of you, what exactly have you done? In 2012, I ran independent from Montague, the great constituency where I was born, lived, raised, and still exist and work. Because you should live where you represent. Because then you'll know the light's off, the water's off, and they got a pothole. I got 11 votes. For your theory, maybe right, maybe not be right, I don't know. But it's taken the last texter from 67 to now, for 49 years, he just realized there's two sides of the same coin, and he's been around that long, so it's taken you at least 20 years to realize. Well, what you gonna do about it? Besides, we go all over talk shows, and we go all over social media and grumble. You see, folks was a little different. They were people of action, not just grumble. Now, you could pack your bag and go to Canada. There's an action. But you'd be going to a country where you don't have ownership of the land. They say we own the land here. They say we own tourism. What part of it do you own? The labor part? Because you certainly don't know
the
bed, the pillow, the knife, spoon, the fork. So my question is, what specifically are you guys in the room going to do? I tell you one thing you could do, and I told Clint Watson this. You guys could start a movement, and you could get today 30 to 50,000 young Bahamians that are eligible to vote through a social media platform. I don't care which one you choose. You're probably better not to choose the one that discriminates, you know, how face. But if you were to get on a social media site, 50,000 of you, the youth, the millennial and whatever comes next, you could actually go to any prime minister and you could demand, before election, of course, so you only got another couple of years, 1 to 5 acres of crown land to be put in your name, clear title. Because when you go to the bank, you know, the white man bank, you could actually get a loan if you have land ownership to put a triplex or a duplex on it and get yourself $100 a night. So that's $200 to $300 a day on Airbnb. You see how the conceptual economy works? But I put it to you that all of you will not do anything but sit there and continue to grumble. And that's how they're going to rule you. But they're going to replace you first. You see, we've been talking about WTO. We've been talking about B1 and B4 visas. We've been talking about what you now are seeing for the last 20 years. So you ain't got much time left to act. So I encourage you to. I just gave you a suggestion because land is what the white people them use for power. Oh. And the black people. You see, land ownership, you couldn't vote without it. But you ain't trying to get some of it. And I'm telling you how to leverage any prime minister. Get cracking. Y'all have a good one.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Graham.
Good morning, caller. You on the air?
Yes, good morning to all.
Good morning.
You know, I really need to make notes before I call, and I didn't this time, but let me do my best. You know, first, you guys are the only show that I'm interested today in mainstream media. You know, you guys are not bootlickers. You guys are an alternative to this economic system that we have in this country, you know, because I believe that money is the answer for most things, mm-hmm. You know, and in fact, you know, I haven't, you know, you guys talk about, what's your major thing?
Oppression.
About, the idea of oppression.
Oppression.
How oppression.
It's back to in the Bahamas.
Right. You see, the system is what's oppressing us.
Yep.
You see, until we address the system, you know, and addressing the system is what we like to call it entrepreneurship. You know, making a few behemoths wealthy at the expense of
the majority, yes.
Of the majority.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and see, I don't know if you guys are gonna take offense to what I have to say. You see, I am convinced that it's the educated among us that is responsible, because it's them who have the mic, the megaphones. You see, things like brain drain, you know, they want to, justify the brain drain, the people who are leaving.
Yeah.
You know, I have sisters and brothers that left.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're doing well, but I don't want them leaving.
No.
I feel like they are spineless. They are traitors. You know, they have a right to choose, to make their choice, you know, but I don't have a right to accept them back.
Mm.
You see?
Mm.
And when they leave, they carry the resources. With them, we bred them, we school them, we give them further education. And then they're asking the people they leave behind, the uneducated ones, to make it what they have. They say, well, hey, you don't have no excuse. You could
Well, yeah, I get why you feel you would feel that way. Definitely, I get it. But yeah,
how
yeah.
could you say that you can't make it? You educated, you got degrees, you're a doctor.
Yeah.
You know, but you're saying that the 28-year-old or the 30-year-old man who's uneducated, how a vetted minor, major, criminal record can make it. You know, they can't measure age instantly like you can.
Yeah.
You see, and you know, and then they would go, many of them in the media, not you guys. You guys are different. They would go in the media and say things like what they say. They say things we overtax in this country, man. You understand me? They don't. They would say things like collecting property tax is a good thing that this government is doing.
Yeah, I know.
That it's an improvement in our taxation. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
In our taxation system. Come on, man.
Yeah, and that's just that's a fat old lie. But yeah, I get it.
We have zero income tax in this country. And all these countries that these people migrate to, they have property tax just like us.
Yep.
They have income tax, many other tax. You see, and they won't address it. They don't want to pay the maids. They tell the maids they gotta go to BTVI or get educated. Come on, who's gonna pick up the garbage?
All right. Well, thank you so much, caller, for your contribution. We appreciate you.
I appreciate you guys. In the last call, I told you guys to form an organization, not a party, but a movement. Because when you form a party, it becomes an issue. You know.
I got you.
Movement is necessary.
Thank you.
Thank you much.
All right. Go ahead. Next caller.
Next caller.
Yeah. Caller, you're on the air. Good morning.
Is that me?
Yeah, yes, that's you. Go ahead.
Okay. And the reason why I call back, right?
Mm-hmm.
A couple of things I want to say. Yeah, there's Randolph Fox. I was around from that time, right?
Okay, go ahead.
Randolph Fox jumped the bandwagon. Okay, he had a Labor Party.
Yeah.
Okay? And he, what happened, because it was the tie, you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
He joined with the
PLP. Yeah.
In order for the PLP to win the election.
Yep.
The thing is, if from a... the PLP hadn't won the election, the majority of people were what you would call colored people, right? Or you say black people.
Black people, black
right.
people, yeah.
So the thing is, folks. The black people still had a chance. The main thing is, right,
mm-hmm.
the black people, all the people know what they wanted,
mm-hmm.
okay? But they didn't say Randolph Fox was all of that. Other thing is, right,
mm-hmm.
The brother would just have spoken. I asked family members that leave the Bahamas also.
Yeah.
They're doing beautiful in the United States, right?
Yeah, uh-huh.
I won't say what they're doing. But they're doing better than they would be doing here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay? Not only that, if they were here, they would have been heinous because of the system.
Yeah.
And that's what has to be changed,
like the caller said, yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. the system.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't have the guts to stand up to help change the system. And that's the problem we're having.
All right. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Caller.
All right. Go ahead, caller.
You on the air?
How are you doing today?
Good morning.
We're good.
Good morning to you guys. You know what? All the other callers was kind of right. But you know what? I find in any organization, people who join the police force, you'll have a you could go to any kindergarten school right now and ask the kids what they want to be, and that's a genuine answer. They want to be a fireman, a police, whatever, an actor, whatever. But it seems that when you get in that position and you see the politics behind it, it tends to discourage you, or you tend to fall in line with the norm, whatever else going on. Because just say a police officer joined the police force, he don't like to see what's going on in his community, all the crime, the this. And he get on the force. He can't lock up who he want to lock up. He missed the lock up the wrong place. And they ship him out to Ragged Island or someplace.
Yeah, you're right. Go ahead. You're very right in that assessment.
So that same thing remains within politics. So you could have any group, any organization come along now and say that they want to, and even God, I mean, God willing, they actually get in power. Then you'll have the norm come. You'll have Mr. So-and-so come and throw his weight around. Then you'll have the people in who normally in charge of the different constituencies or, you know, Miss So-and-so who have 10 children in the house and normally any part. You understand? So we can have the same kind of norms. But the most important thing is you can't make change unless you in charge. You know, like, so the key in this aspect for us in the Bahamas is we have to form some type of organization that's willing to make the change, and then the trick is to get in power so that you can absolutely make the changes. But it's a really balancing act. But I think we as a young Bahamian on the right track. It just in the, I've been at this for a long time, but it's just, it's mind-boggling.
I know.
You actually get in the position, then you gotta, and that's when the politics start to kick in. And then a lot of people just fall in line and say, you know what? I might as well just use this rubber stamp and get what is mine while I could get it. Because I ain't nothing can change. You know, so we're all absolutely right on that point of view. Okay. But we just gotta find some kind of way to, you know, to make the changes. I mean, to be committed. And, you know, be honest and make the changes we need. Once again, guys, you all have a good show. You all keep up the good work.
Thank you so much,
Thank you very much, Colin. Did you see the story with Leslie Miller?
No, I didn't see it. What did he say again?
He was talking about how he was on a radio show. I think he was on somebody's show.
I think I glimpsed that.
With that point, that last point that Colin made, it reminds so much of William Monroe. I keep talking about him, but
I'm
tired of it. But he made a point about how basically this certain crew, his words were that, He tries to call them and have conversation with them and taking up all the money.
I saw the statement. Yeah. I was like, I thought it was
very hypocritical, right? But
no, it is very hypocritical because how does the hog call a hog a hog? Like, I just don't get it. Like, I really don't. No, but Demja, you wanted to say something to the first call. I think you wanted to respond. You can't even remember what it was. I know, right? It was a lot. Okay, so
but I think you know, Graham has been calling into the show. I think I'll be here for about 5 years come September.
Right? He often calls.
Yeah. Right. And he's always had sort of quarrels with some guests sometimes. Yeah. Right.
Some of them are valid.
I think he makes some valid point, but he always presses that point of us to stop grumbling and to do something about it. Right. But I often want, you say this all the time, right? Grumbling is the beginning of that change, right?
I wouldn't even call it grumbling, but yeah. But
complaining ahead. In upper quotes, right?
Yeah.
That idea of complaining is the beginning of that change, right? And so something about that, right? Yeah. We are come on radio every Saturday morning, 9 o'clock in the morning, wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning, to bathe, to brush my teeth and eat.
To come here and talk about these topics that nobody else are talking about.
Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
A common complaint that I get across my platforms is that I often just complain or I'm just talking about problems that don't actually exist. But the problem is that the nature of complaining about something does not negate the seriousness of the problem.
Thank you.
It doesn't matter how many videos I make about homophobia, for example, or misogyny.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter how I choose to talk about it, I'm still talking about a serious problem. Mm-hmm. And it's not just complaining, because I'm talking about something that affects millions of people daily,
thousands,
constantly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if you just try to say, oh, well, you're just complaining, you're trying to size that down into something that
it's a tool. It's a silencing tool.
Mm-hmm.
When they say that you're complaining, right? Because Bethel Bennett, you could tell the power of the critique. You have to be able to critique these systems. You have to be able to look at them through a critical lens and see whether. And so when The reason why you can make so much videos about misogyny is because it's pervasive. Mm-hmm. The Constitution is misogynistic mm-hmm. in its approach to women and all feminine people that exist in this space. Mm-hmm. So, like, I don't understand. I don't.
The Constitution is also unequal mm-hmm. in the patriarchy. Way it addresses, yeah, not just patriarchy. In the way it addresses people who are non-white.
Yes.
While the Constitution does not speak to that, it is, and it permits it's discrimination in very interesting ways. And I know people are listening and will complain that the Constitution does not do that. But when you look at the way the Constitution and most British framed constitutions after colonialism, the damn thing never ends, but... After official colonialism, they are all incredibly misogynistic, incredibly
racist,
but also unequal in the way that they provide power. And one of the things that David Harvey says is you can't touch power.
No.
So you don't understand that power is real because it's...
intangible.
It's intangible.
Yeah.
No. I'm reading A Brief History of Neoliberalism right now.
Oh,
amazing.
I had to read that. That was one of the books that we had to read in this class.
I read it, and everything just turned on. It's like,
yes.
Everything makes sense.
Yes.
But then you walk into a classroom, and students say to you that, I don't understand why you're complaining about high theory and low theory, or high culture and low culture. It doesn't matter. That there is a high culture and that there is a low culture. And I'm like, yes, it does.
It does.
Because your assumption that this culture is low says that you value that culture less than high culture. Oh, no, but that's okay. I'm like, it makes me feel comfortable to understand that there is a high culture and there's a low culture.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
But that disparity means that you value yourself less than you value somebody else.
So you have to explain high culture and low culture.
High culture is what we presume the theater to be, a certain kind of theater, opera, classical music. That is all high culture. And one of the things that Edward Said did was that he really deconstructed the way high culture perpetuated the same myths of coloniality and colonialism and otherness that were operating.
So by high culture, you actually mean dominant culture then?
High culture, but not just dominant culture. The there can be low culture within the dominant culture.
Okay, I got you.
So the dominant culture is the pervasive colonizing culture. Within that culture, you have high culture, the arts that are preserved for a particular group of people. And then you have Shakespeare, that would allow the class, the general rabs, to come in and throw tomatoes if they were unhappy.
Uh-huh.
So, again, we don't discuss these things because there is no place to discuss that anymore. You know, the idea is that the University of Wolf Road has ceased to exist and never existed because the generation like you don't understand that that was a reality.
No, but I often tell you, Dr. Bertha Bennett, I often say to you that your conceptualization of what Nassau looked like, and I keep telling, like, he'll be like, you remember when this is there? I was like, remember that?
I was on Wolf Road passing that intersection between the Island Lock and the now... Wendy's was there, and my father was like, oh, see, University of Wolf Road. I'm like, what are you talking about?
Yes, but watch this. So when we have that conversation, particularly when Benny and I talk, yeah. I often say to him, you have to give me context. Or the way that you saw Nassau, because I was born in the 80s, late 80s, and so you have to give me that kind of context, because I don't have that. But go ahead, we have a caller.
We have a caller. Caller, you're in the air. Sorry about that.
Yes, I had to call there. You know, What I feel that is lacking with you guys, right, is a larger platform.
Okay.
You see, there's no access. You see, like your show should be should be on YouTube.
Well, they are technically.
Well, they are on YouTube.
We have to,
See, when Graham tell you need a movement, you don't need a political, a government movement like the PLP.
No.
You know what I'm saying? You need an activist movement. You see, and a movement here has the numbers. You see, and
yeah.
You see,
but they have
you,
their own
you got, but we don't have any racism. We have classes, and that's discrimination.
Yeah.
You see, that's what, you know, and you guys always address these issues.
Yeah.
But you don't have any platform. Nobody's echoing your sentiments.
Well, I don't know.
How do I get the show? How do I get the show right now here and post this to the media?
So it's on Spotify, and so there's a platform for it. So the show is on Spotify. It gets uploaded to Spotify. And it's on YouTube as well. I don't know if every show is uploaded to YouTube.
I think everything was uploaded to YouTube.
But I know for
every
sure.
Every show is uploaded to YouTube?
Yes. You could type in Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM in the YouTube browser, and then you'll be able to see all the shows that are coming up each week.
And
they repost it.
You can also go to the Guardian website for the podcast.
Well. Yes, the podcast is right there.
The old episodes.
Yeah, and so it does have a platform. Now, I think that comes with the territory caller, and you often call in, right? I appreciate you.
Yeah, man, and see, and I'm not, I don't have any, you know, participate like I should.
Uh-huh.
You know, and that's an issue. You know, you guys are most needed, man. You guys are the only alternative show on the radio. You are guys are the debate of all those other shows. You know, they talk about two sides of the same coin.
Yeah.
All of our parties are the same side of all of whatever they are. They all of them are capitalists. All of them believe in foreign investors. All of them believe and they don't believe in income tax. You know.
Yeah, agreed. They're all capitalists.
They are the Republican Party of they are the far right.
Yes.
All of our parties are far right organizations. Every last one of them.
Well, thank you so much for the call for that call.
Thank you very much for calling. Good morning, caller. You on there? I think this is 52 calling, and you know
hello. Good morning. How you doing?
Hey, 52. How you doing?
Good morning to all of you guys.
Good morning.
I'm talking to your guest, Dr. Michael Bennett. I was listening to him and Dr. Chris Curry. I like, you know.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I want you guys to really. I know you took what Graham said very seriously, and so that's the way to create an impetus to what you young guys want to achieve. So you know, people my age, it makes me feel better. And takes away some of my despair and disillusion and frustration. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It really, you know, because we need it, and so it gives us hope. And so I'm going to look at this. You was talking about the financial conditions of the country. And see, what happens is, I don't know, third world leaders, the knowledge that I have is not unique to me.
Mm-hmm.
What third world leaders have failed to do is come together as a real, real influence in the global economy. And so what you have now is a text uncle yesterday, and they realize what's going on. You have the developed countries, they have made their money now. And so we support them by buying their products. So what they do is they use their monopolistic wealth to drive global policies.
Yep.
You see that with the Rothschilds, right? Whereby the usury laws, I guess you guys, someone in the coup should know what that is, right?
Yeah.
All right. So they manipulated that and get the governments to change that in order for them to gain financial wealth from the usury laws. Now you see excessive interest rates being charged, in which interest rates would mean that money that exists before they lend you the money.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at how the Federal Reserve and how the Biden, I don't even need to get into it because I'm not a financial expert. I'm just a well-read person in this area.
Mm-hmm.
And I am not hearing certain things from the well-read, educated people. When you look at let's look at the effect of the war in Ukraine on the European economies, right?
Yeah.
And you look at what's going on in China, and you can see the world is teetering on the of a world with recession. But yet still, they want me and you to believe that this doesn't affect us. We mm-hmm. know that the world is moving towards a resource-based economy. Graham said something very important. You know, land possession, land wealth is very crucial. You know, in economics. You know, but they want us to deny that, not just with resources. All right.
But
and
the land.
Mayor Rothschild is quoted as saying, give me control of a nation's money, and I care not who makes its laws. So that should give you an idea what time it is. Have a good day. Bless
all right. Thank you so much, 52.
But the land is not ours. The land is designed not to be held in Bahamian hands. It is mm-hmm. in trust by the crown. So what we
forget is that this is designed this way for a reason. Landed here, they took the land, notwithstanding whomever else was in place.
Yeah.
They took the land from those people and claimed it as theirs.
Mm-hmm.
When we had the reception of laws, the laws established that this was property of the crown and English law dominates. Now, there is a problem in there because that was never decolonized by independence. That continues. So English law remains supreme in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, and the choice has been to remain a Commonwealth and to retain those very structurally racist, structurally classist laws that do not enfranchise people.
The majority of the population here, yeah.
Equitably.
Yes. No, but I think, so there were a lot of things that brought up. So I think that, did you bring up the great point? But this goes back to the idea of why we continue to be oppressed in this country, right? I think that we don't understand that laws in particular are part of the oppressing, are the biggest part of the oppressing. That you can visibly point, the laws are the tangibleness of my oppression. And if the law doesn't speak or capture me within it, that means I am not included within that framework of what the law either allows or restricts, right?
The law doesn't usually allow. The law restricts you from doing.
No, but yes, it restricts. But so I was reading, I can't remember, Borrello, I think it's this, or Borrello is the name of the paper that I was reading. He was talking about the purpose of law. And he was saying that the law is there to change behavior, right? In that it forces you to do something, or it compels you to do something that you don't want to do, or it stops you from doing something that you're already doing. And so, that's what I'm talking about. So, you know.
So yes. the you shall put your car on the right side of the road on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays is a regulation put in place by the Hamilton Authority, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
You shall not as this.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the challenges that we, again, let's go back to the liberals.
Mm-hmm.
The neoliberal comes from the liberals. It's a new form of liberalism.
Yes.
It does not mean that it was better than the conservatives. It means that it was supposedly more liberatory. Mm-hmm. But the liberation that was provided was within a structure that understood that there were inequalities. And so when somebody like Dr. Nicolette Bethel says, well, we have done great things. Yes, we have. But within the system, we are definitely unequal because the liberal system has provided a space for these disorderly Negroes to exist.
Yep. No. But I think one of the, so I think you need to talk about this. So one of the things you talked about a lot in your class, you often brought up the Vagrancy Act, which I don't think that we understand. Like there are a lot of racist, colonialist laws that disenfranchise are even gathering together, and the Vagrancy Act is proof of that.
I was reading, I think it was written by Dr. Chris Curry, I think, as well as
Andrew Lanton. I know what you're talking about. The prisoners thing.
Yes,
I read that. Yeah.
And talk about how the progression of the prison system was essentially created to confine black bodies. Because at the time, what was happening was that the population shift was happening. Right? You had more blacks coming to the colony, and they were concerned about how we're going to now control this black population.
Mm-hmm.
And what the paper concludes is that, like you're talking about laws, is that still now, what is in place
Controls black bodies,
and very much hasn't changed from the 1900s and 1800s, basically.
No, but go ahead.
But that's why the prison is such, as Foucault says, such a successful system, because you have.
It's about to amp up and become the
black. No, a private part.
The industrial prison complex is about to hit here.
It has probably hit already, and we just don't know.
Yeah,
because. It's so interesting, right? Because I remember, and I'm talking about the credit rating system, right?
Mm-hmm.
I understand that it's operating now, but I heard no big announcement.
No, we don't even talk about that.
Yeah.
The public has not been educated about what that bureau system is going to, how it's going to restrict their access to the financial system.
But it's operating.
But it's operating.
I don't know that.
So it's the thing, right?
So, but this is one of the problems with the Information Act.
No.
The government can do whatever it wishes to do and obfuscate.
Well, there is an act, but it isn't really an act. So go ahead. No, I've read it. Remember?
You mean the one that gives all the power to the minister to decide what the minister is and if you are being a nuisance?
Yes, it says, like no. Yeah. The word says, if you vex the minister... If the
I'm
request,
very sorry for you, Natino.
I wouldn't get any requests.
So it's like I was looking at also the budget allocation that they made to the Freedom of Information. I think it was on like $140,000.
No.
And so
okay, yeah,
how
yeah.
are you supposed to operate with $140,000? And this thing is supposed to have information.
Didn't they appoint someone as the?
Yeah, I think a justice now. I think a former justice or something like that is now in charge of the Freedom of Information.
I've been following up on that for a bit, and from time to time I reread that act to see how ridiculous it is.
So now that Freedom of Information Act has no teeth.
No,
they
it has
will
no.
buck up
like
Urkel,
just getting teeth. No, Urkel.
Urkel will only get teeth because it needs to police the credit processing thing.
The reason why I bring up Urkel is because there was in the paper saying how they're trying to figure out a way to calculate how to penalize people. So I'm like, you mean y'all been in place all this time and y'all ain't had no mechanism to literally fine Cable Bahamas or BPL? They
who
that.
Urkel?
The government.
But doesn't it also have like a fee structure as well? Where I think user fees are supposed to help help with the management of the whole thing.
But this is and you know I want to say some things I can't. But yes, you say the Freedom of Information Act needs teeth.
But the Freedom of Information Act bucks up in the system that has ministerial privilege or ministerial authority to determine what information shall be shared. So the minister always has the ability to trump the Freedom of Information Act, thereby canceling freedom.
Like, no, but that's just like the digital assessment of assets act. But they put in you know when they were getting FTX and then they were talking about this digital something act. I read through it. Right, there's no reporting mechanisms for those companies. No financial reporting. They are not required. It's not mandatory. It's at the request of the minister. And I'm like, that you leave. That's a loophole. You leave it open for these companies to literally do whatever they can do whatever they want.
So when we look at companies coming in and doing whatever they want, of course there is no history of that because we are a colony created for this to happen.
Mm-hmm.
This is the reason the Bahamas was designed the way it was, so that companies could come in, set up shop. It was about plantations succeeding within the colonial structure. And just like the East India Company, and the East India Company was established to put in place some kind of capital capture. So again, you go into capture.
Yes.
But capture has existed.
You have to explain that though for people. Capture is when a group of people or with a particular kind of interest take hold of a systematic structure or take hold of the policy being in place, and they use that kind of what the word is their pull to get the policy to fit or to allow them to do whatever they need to do in their interest. So
public-private partnerships.
Yes, that's public-private partnerships. Yeah. So yeah.
But the idea of public-private partnerships is to be able to facilitate better development. However, public-private partnerships don't necessarily work if the private arm of the partnership
dominates
the public arm, which has happened throughout the PPP
yes.
situation.
Yes.
Yeah. And you know we know this because the plantation was in some ways, was a public-private partnership between the crown and the cousins.
The plantations, yeah.
No, but you, hold up. The merchants, yes. The cousins,
they were all cousins to the king and the queen.
But also the system is a mercantile system.
It's a mercantile system.
So we're out of that mercantilist system.
Pero es importante. I did this graduate course in mercantile law at the University of Puerto Rico back in the golden age of youth. And it was really interesting to look at the way the structures of mercantilism develops within Britain, but it had already existed in the colonies.
Yes.
Because you have the development of the textile industry in the 19th century,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And that opens the doors to an industrial revolution that shifts the entire... So if you read Piketty, you get to the structures. And then you come back to David Harvey, and he starts talking about what Neil Smith talks about in Uneven Development. The fact that uneven development happens because it is the plan. It is the capture that allows uneven development and then perpetuates it within a legal structure.
Yeah.
That when you have schools that we were talking about, and those schools are hit by Hurricane Natino, Hurricane George, Hurricane whatever,
yeah.
and those schools close, there is no need for those schools to reopen because you don't have sufficient students to warrant having a school in that place. So what you effectively have done is destroyed the community by moving the schools. So in Puerto Rico, this has happened a great deal.
Yes, they talk about that.
And it started happening prior to Irma and Maria. But the way that education got around it was because they were using La Ley Siete, the seven law, which gave government the ability, which we do not understand in this country very well, to use austerity measures to do what it needed to do to create money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that you could ignore, which is something that was done under the pandemic, you could ignore all the rights and privileges or rights that people had, made systems that then policed them.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Which you saw.
Yes, yes, yes.
But you don't know the other things that were happening in the background. And so in Puerto Rico, all of that was happening under the
that was happening
auspices.
Before the pandemic.
See, this was happening under the auspices of Law 7.
Okay.
And Law 7 takes effect in, I think it was 2008. And definitely by 2011, Law 7 is entrenched. And Law 7 has not been repealed, so Law 7 goes on, which, again, it gives the government the authority to go in and sack the pension funds.
Oh, wow.
Oh, no, it gives the government lots of authority. But it's the same thing that we are seeing. So the schools don't need to be there, even though it takes me an hour to get to the next school. Because they look like they are so close on a map with somebody from Washington who has never been to the mountains in Puerto Rico. So we have the same thing here. Well, if you are in Ragged Island, why don't you just go to school in New Providence? Because it's better for you there. But we are not considering the structures of inequality that exist within the schools in New Providence that did not exist within the school in Ragged Island,
yeah.
and the fact that you have just dispopulation through your unintended, perhaps.
I like the word perhaps.
No, you're right. So one of the things that I found out is particularly with oppression, at least when I was reading, they were saying, many people don't understand that they're not acting on purpose, right? When you tell them that they're oppressing you, they love to believe this, that they can occupy some neutral position, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's no neutrality in oppression. Desmond Tutu has this this quote. He says, "If you are neutral in situations of injustice, you have chosen the side of the oppressor. If an elephant has its foot on the tail of a mouse, and you say that you are neutral, the mouse will not appreciate your neutrality,"
mm-hmm.
right? And it's this, to explain, because I know we're almost out of time, when we talk about this dichotomy between oppressor and oppressed, right? These are not static categories, right? These are situational categories where your behavior then determines exactly if you are behaving in, if you are oppressing someone, or if you're being oppressed. And I think that that's something that we often miss, right? Because I know that oftentimes people are not focused on, they're not acting on purpose, right? But their purpose is not focused on restricting the actual choices of people, but their behavior does that. And getting people to understand that their behavior is oppressive, that the people are colluding with structures of oppression, right? That even being passive means that you are allowing oppressive structures to exist and proliferate and be perpetuated. That's the idea, right? Because we often talk about this, there's the disconnect between what my behavior contributes to and what my goals are in life. So let's say that me and Tate are friends, right? I'm in a different class than Tate, but my behavior restricts the ability for Tate to move up the socioeconomic ladder, right? If I don't perceive that my goals and my and the subsequent behavior that follow in terms of that, right, restrict Tate's access, then I cannot understand when Tate says to me that he's being oppressed. And I need us to get that. You were going to say something.
Yeah, I was going to say that a lot of people get more offended with an accusation of oppression rather than thinking, okay, I'm actually oppressing this person. They take it so personally because calling out somebody for doing something problematic, it usually will liken to a part of their personality that they might not even be aware of. So you might say, oh, that little side comment you said to your girlfriend is a bit misogynistic, and they might feel some kind of way about you saying that because they feel as though that's their personality. Like, that's...
Yes, like, yes.
They grew up saying these things. Everybody around them is like that. So how can you say that, oh, that's misogynist? Are you attacking the whole person? You're pointing out that our society enables that kind of behavior so much to the point where somebody can grow up and live for 20 years, and then their whole personality is built on top of misogyny, patriarchy, yes, homophobia,
yes,
all these different things.
Yes, thank you for that great example. Go ahead.
So we have some text.
I know.
These text images that you can at 422-4796. That is 422-4796. The first text says, about Carla that was talking about the educated leaving the country for greener pastures. As an educated young person, I understand why he feels that way.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I feel like there are a lot of people who have tried to make life in the Bahamas work for them, or I've seen other people try to make it work to no avail. I don't fault people for wanting to be happy. We have one life to live. That's true. And it's a lot of responsibility to put on one group of people to change the mindset of an entire country. We all have to be invested, and we all have to play a part in progress. Until more people can join the fight, I don't think much progress can be made. Then this next tester said, the systems for change is in place. It's the persons managing the systems that need to be changed. Interesting.
Yeah, very.
Complain in a new way, because the same old way is a turnoff with question mark. Or maybe turn complaining into more progressive political action that's organized CF Nkrumah. I don't know what that's.
Nkrumah.
And the last person said, the oppressed and the oppressor equal participants in ignorance.
Ignorance is constructed as well.
Manufactured, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because
please.
Just the way you manufacture consent,
you manufacture
ignorance. Yes. So the fact that so much... DMJ was going to say something.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the something that the first message said, when they said that a lot of young people seem to have a responsibility to come back to the Bahamas and fix it. The position that I'm in now, where I have the ability to, you know, go off and possibly stay off and not come back. There's a lot of different things pulling and pushing me from the Bahamas. One, given all the things we were talking about, you know, land, you know, the POP, the FNM, the government. And then things that are keeping me here is that I still want to preserve our culture. You know, even though I know that a lot of our culture is rooted in things that probably shouldn't be rooted in. I feel as though we have to really put in effort to preserve the Bahamas from becoming something that it's not. But on the other hand, Like the person said, you have one life to live, and who am I to dedicate my whole life to a cause that I'm fighting one at themselves?
So, well, I don't know if Bahamians don't actually want it themselves, but do they understand that it is available? Do they see it as a possibility? Is there an opportunity? Is there a choice? And remember, again, choice is constructive. Your choice is limited by what you actually can see. So you have spatial awareness is essential, but we do not have spatial awareness because we have self-segregated in many different ways. And that self-segregation you see in the United States in places like Georgia, Atlanta, where blacks will circulate within a particular space and whites will circulate within a different space, even though desegregation or segregation ended ages ago. The Bahamas segregation ended in the 1960s.
But it's still,
but it's still
proliferates.
It's actually more pervasive now because of the ways that it ended and was silenced. And then you have spaces within spaces that have been normalized so that, I'm going to try and say this really quickly, so that you don't see them. And you don't see the people moving in and out of them who do not look like you, who do not think like you, but who exist in a global space that is physically rooted in the Bahamas, but is actually not a part of the ecosystem.
But also, but we don't have access to that. Also, we don't have access to that. We've never.
What stops you from having access?
The only, hold up, the only way you have access is if you work in for the people, eh?
Well.
See, and watch this. That's the big thing. So we have 3 minutes left in the show. We may have to do a part two to this one. Carla,
you have 30 seconds. Good morning, Carla, you on the air? Oh, I guess they left.
All right. Well, we'll have to do a part two to this. I think to the caller was, I don't think we need to find a new way to complain. Like this is.
No, I think they were actually being sarcastic.
Oh, okay.
Because they put a question mark in the text.
Okay.
And it didn't complete that.
Okay. Point. Okay. Yeah. Well, in any event, we have 2 minutes left. What are your final thoughts for this particular episode or segment that we did today?
One of the callers was talking about how you guys need a bigger platform. And I was just thinking about that too. I always think about the silent majority of Bahamians who don't think about these things at all. They just go day to day without even contemplating, you know, where is my space in Bahamian society? And I feel like the biggest thing that we could do as people who understand these problems is to try to reach out to those people and let them know that things can get better and that, you know, the life they are living now isn't all there is.
Okay.
And that, you know, you could just be better, basically.
Yeah. All right. Dr. B, what are your final thoughts?
I don't know if I have any final thoughts.
Well,
could
we do a part two today?
Why
are you asking me like I'm some dictator?
Dictatorships are really important to listen to.
This is the stop it.
This is. I remember when I lived in Spain and people would say, "Tú sabes, under Franco, things were much better."
So are you available? Both of you. We'll do part two to this next week, Saturday. Can you both of y'all be back? I know that you're going on sabbatical, right?
I am not sure. Okay, about Saturday, but
we'll try to do that.
One of the challenges I have is the spatial marker of the Bahamas.
Yes.
Everything functions around tourism. Tourism was designed not for the Bahamas. It was designed to bring people in and through. So the relationship between tourism and the Bahamas is very destructive.
Yes.
To use a Marxian term, creative destruction. So, or is it destructive creation?
Yeah. I get it. Yes. Go ahead, Jay.
So I'm looking for a producer.
Well, that ain't bad.
Please come back in now. Okay. Yeah, last words.
Okay, so my last words, we're trying to do and we're going to continue to do what we do here, and that is bring you something different. We're going to continue to talk about the topics that not many people are talking about on air. And I hope that you are educated or you learn something. And I hope that your day is transformed and that you take this throughout the weekend and begin to see exactly what we're talking about and make the connections between what we're saying and your lived experience. And that's, yeah, that's
me. Yeah, you know, we call ourselves a show that brings us the Bahamas a weekly dose of something different every week. I sound very enthusiastic about that. But, yeah, I think that we're doing good things on the show.
Yeah.
I think what the callers were saying today, basically a reflection of that. And hopefully we can do more of that in the coming months. Yeah. But as we end, we always say, many
hands
build a school.
Uh-huh.
Many hearts to build a community.
Uh-huh.
And it takes many engaged
behaviors like you and I
to make a better Bahamas. So on that note, please be good, Bahamas.
Be good, yes.
And we will see you next week.
All right, thank you. Find what you love and let it kill you. Sharpen the pressure, thinking.